Hello, this is Rita Schulte with the Decatur Herald and Review from Sunday, June 2nd and Monday, June 3rd. We'll begin today's reading on the front page of the Sunday edition. Our first story is headlined, Overtime Produces Budget in State Government. $45 billion Statewide Construction Program Heads to the Senate by John O'Connor. The Illinois House cranked out mountains of legislation Saturday in an overtime workday, producing a $39.9 billion budget. A $45 billion state construction program and billions of dollars in new taxes and fees to fund it, from a doubled gasoline tax to a Leviathan expansion of gambling. Democrats, who control every facet of state government, led the way with cooperation from minority Republicans who acknowledge the budget is balanced, were gratified to get business-building, job-creating incentives, and recognize the need to pay for fixing roads, schools, prisons, and other public works ignored for years. This state is uniquely situated in our country, GOP Representative Tim Butler of Springfield said during a debate over doubling the gasoline tax to 38 cents a gallon. We're a leader in transportation, but our infrastructure is crumbling. We have to reinvest, people. Lawmakers blew the Friday deadline for adjourning their spring session in part because of the hours of debate consumed by historic votes. They approved asking voters to decide in next year's election whether to change the state constitution to allow replacing a flat income tax with a graduated one based on income. And Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker says he will sign a law to make Illinois the 11th state to legalize marijuana for recreational use. The Senate must return to Springfield today to finish action on the infrastructure improvement legislation and to consider the gambling package. Here's a rundown of final day action. The budget. House action Saturday nearly concludes work on a $39.9 billion spending plan for the budget year that begins July 1st, a 2% increase over the current year. Republicans agreed it's balanced and it provides a $375 million increase to public education to fund the school aid formula revamped 2 years ago, a 5% bump. The plan includes increases for higher education, fully funds the required $9 billion pension contributions, and allows borrowing $1.2 billion to pay down a lingering $6.7 billion pile of overdue bills to save money on interest payments. And it increases by $100 million funding for the Department of Children and Family Services. The agency is reeling from criticism over its inability to save three children in its care who have died this year, including two-year-old Tanaja Barnes of Decatur. A state construction program. The House put finishing touches on a $45 billion statewide construction program for roads, bridges, mass transit, schools, prisons, and other public works. The Senate's Sunday agenda includes considering the plan. It calls for a variety of new and increased taxes, such as doubling the gas tax to 38 cents per gallon and increasing vehicle registration fees by 50% to $150, lower than what Pritzker proposed. It increases the per pack cigarette tax by $1 to $2.98. It also cuts out potentially contentious taxes, such as a real estate transfer tax increase, a $1 a ride fee for ride-sharing services, and a 7% tax on cable, satellite, and streaming video services. But now it counts on hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue from legalized sports betting and casino expansion. Gambling expansion and sports betting. A proposal to legalize sports betting emerged this spring after the U.S. Supreme Court okayed it outside of Nevada. But the Illinois legislation languished until last week when Republican Robert Rita, a Democrat from Chicago, suburb of Blue Island, tacked it on to a long-discussed expansion of existing casino gambling. The House okayed the package last night. It would legalize sports betting and allow for adding casinos in Chicago and its suburbs to the north and south, Rockford, Danville, and southern Illinois. It would expand gambling slots at the state's 10 existing casinos and and add horse tracks. A preliminary estimate puts the first-year licensing and tax revenue at more than $700 million. It would be the largest contributor to the construction program's so-called vertical projects, buildings such as schools, prison, and sewer treatment plants as opposed to roads. The Senate has yet to consider the gambling array. Graduated income tax. The legislature voted to send a constitutional amendment to the November 2020 ballot asking voters whether they want to switch from a flat rate income tax to one based on income. If approved, the new scaled approach would take effect in January 2021. In separate action, Pritzker was sent legislation establishing the rates should the new system be enacted. They top out at 7.99% for the state's wealthiest residents. Pritzker contends that 97% of taxpayers will pay no more than they do now, because those earning less than $250,000 would pay at most the current 4.95% rate that applies to the flat tax. Marijuana. Pritzker will get legislation to allow residents to buy and possess up to 1 ounce or 30 grams of marijuana for personal use. Pritzker is expected to sign the measure to make Illinois the 11th state, along with the District of Columbia, to allow recreational use. Supporters say the new law also will remedy past injustices to minorities who were disproportionately affected by the war on drugs. The plan allows scrubbing of criminal records for anyone convicted of possessing 30 grams of marijuana or less, and offers incentives to minority investors who want to enter what will likely be a burgeoning new marijuana industry. In a related article from State Government, Pritzker expected to sign abortion legislation, by Rebecca Ansel. Governor J.B. Pritzker is expected to sign legislation that backers and detractors agree will be the most liberal reproductive health statute in the country. In Illinois, we trust women to make the most personal and fundamental decision of their lives, and now that will be the law of the land, even as it's under threat in other states, said Pritzker, a Democrat, in a statement. Pritzker was on the Senate floor on Friday night after the vote, congratulating and hugging senators who pushed the bill. The vote came after about 80 minutes of impassioned debate by the Illinois Senate. The abortion repeal and replace measure was a source of controversy this session. From its introduction in February, the Reproductive Health Act drew calls of support from advocates looking to the General Assembly to respond to restrictions enacted by some states across the country, and those of warning from opponents concerned about protections being struck from current law. Senator Melinda Bush, a Democrat from Grays Lake and the bill's sponsor in that chamber, said she hopes passage of the legislation will make the state a beacon for the country. "I'm so proud that Illinois is standing up and saying, we're not going back. We're going to continue to fight, and we're going to make sure that women are equal here. Their reproduction rights are part of that," she said. Chicago Democratic Representative Kelly Cassidy, the initiative sponsor in the House, was on the floor during the debate. In the back of the chamber were a handful of other Democratic representatives who supported the legislation, who stood and joined hands during Bush's closing remarks. "That was amazing to have them all over here. I was there when it passed in the House because it was so important to all of us," Bush said, "to have that amazing camaraderie and support and really love for each other. I'm just so proud of all these amazing women. It really felt like a sisterhood." The measure received 34 Democratic yes votes. 20 senators voted no, including lone Democrat, Bunker Hill Democrat, Andy Menar. Three Democrats voted present. Some of Bush's colleagues who asked her questions during the floor discussion were helping her establish what is known as legislative intent. If a legal challenge is filed regarding the bill and the judge finds its language unclear, he will turn to the sponsor's aim to help him decide the case. They asked her to clarify whether women would be able to get an abortion procedure at any point during her pregnancy if the Reproductive Health Act became law. Bush said they would not, and if anyone besides doctors could perform a procedural abortion. Bush said no. She read prepared answers to several of these questions. The measure, Bush said, codified current practices and repeals part of Illinois law enjoined by courts. Senator Dan McConchie, a Republican from Hawthorne Woods, said that if that was all the bill aimed to achieve, it would be one page, not 126. We're trying to make sure that we're protecting a woman's fundamental rights. We are trying to make sure that the RHA treats abortion like any other medical procedure under the law, and I believe, frankly, that there is a war against women's rights going on, Bush said. McConchie sought clarification on whether any provisions of the legislation would render toothless the parental notification of abortion law, which requires a minor to consult her parents before getting the procedure. Bush said no part of her bill would impact that statute. This proposal leaves me stunned, McConchie said. For anyone who wants abortions to be legal and safe, this bill will do exactly the opposite. Republican Senator Jill Tracy from Quincy called the bill extreme. It goes far beyond the current practice in Illinois. It has provisions that could endanger rather than protect a pregnant woman, and it's not needed under current Illinois law or federal law, she said. Once again, in Illinois, we are passing bills looking to solve problems that don't exist. On page one of Sunday's paper is an article headlined Demand for Dennis. School doesn't have enough space for all who want to go, by Valerie Wells. Stephanie Jones moved to Decatur's West End specifically to send her children to Dennis School. And while Jones's son is in third grade at Dennis, she said, she was told there's no place for her daughter, who will be in the first grade next year. Her daughter will have to go to one of the other buildings in the district, but Jones doesn't yet know which one. When she tried to register her daughter for kindergarten this year, there was no room either, so Joan homeschools her for kindergarten. It kind of stinks having two kids in separate schools, she said. I was told I could pull her son out of Dennis and send him to the same school she goes to, but that defeats the purpose of moving here. The Dennis boundaries are home to 878 children who could be eligible to attend Dennis School, which is not a magnet school, with its project-based learning model and its partnership with Millikan University as a lab school. Dennis has proven to be a popular choice. Like Jones, families are moving into homes within its boundaries in order to send their children to that school. The problem is Dennis can't hold them all. Of the 878 children, 478 are enrolled at Dennis. Another 240 attend one of Decatur's magnet schools, which leaves about 160 kids who have to be assigned, as Joan's daughter will be, to one of the other nearby elementary schools. As part of the Decatur School District's five-year strategic plan, Dennis will expand into two buildings in fall 2020. French Academy at the corner of Wood and Monroe Streets will move into the building now occupied by Enterprise School at 2115 South Taylor Road. Dennis will take over the French building as its second location. Getting the second building when French moves out to Enterprise, that really opens up additional seats, said Fred Bouchard, Assistant Superintendent of Support Services. We don't have room at the inn right now. We use our pod system and enrollment balancing, so some of those students are at South Shores and some are at Oak Grove or Franklin, other schools that are in pretty close proximity. Consolidating elementary buildings, which is on the district's strategic plan and should be completed by August 2021, will mean redrawing boundaries, and a group is already working on that, he said. The district's buildings will decrease from 22 to 17 by then. At present, the pod system assigns students to a nearby building if there isn't room at the building they would otherwise attend, as happens to Joan's daughter. This pod system isn't ideal, he said, but we do know that when we combine schools, we need to talk about what those boundaries would look like and making sure we're making good decisions based on that future and what building capabilities are. At Dennis, a committee of students, parents, and teachers has met twice and will meet throughout the summer to narrow down their ideas for the move, said Keith Creighton, principal intern and leader of the visionary team. He's been a teacher at Dennis for several years. The hope is that the committee will have two or three workable plans by September and have that refined by December into one plan to present to the school board. There's been a lot of excitement on the student end about being empowered and being impactful on the world, Creighton said. They're starting to see that their actions, their choices, and their work can affect the larger world outside. And that's a real exciting thing. It's helped to build community here at the school, and it's helped to create a family atmosphere. It's helped to have students dream bigger than I had experienced before when teaching. The students' partnership with Millikan University, which began in 2012, means that Millikan students studying to be teachers have a place to apply what they're learning, but also means that dentist students benefit from having those college students as mentors, said Jaden Hinton, a sixth grader who has been a dentist since kindergarten. First grade teacher Cassie Mann said she thinks the dentist students spend more time interacting with the community due to their project-based learning model, and therefore word gets out about the school thanks to the kids' enthusiasm. That may be one reason people move to homes inside the boundaries in the hope of getting their kids into dentists. When we have all these kids in a boundary that want to go to dentists and we have to turn kids away, Mann said. We have all these kids who live close to our schools but can't get in because we're over capacity. We have teachers, specialists, counselors in converted closets. We don't even have the space for the people we need to have here. That's a problem. People are even choosing to move into our neighborhood, and we have to tell them, sorry, you just bought a house, but we don't have room for your kid. The hope is that expanding will make room for those students, she said. Space is at such a premium, Creighton said. The closets have been turned into offices and even classrooms. Every inch of space is being used. The band meets on a wide landing between floors, jokingly dubbed the Blanding for band landing. Art classes are constricted on which projects they can tackle because there's no permanent art classroom, so they can't do anything that has to dry overnight, for example. Among many other reasons for looking forward to the expansion, he said, is knowing that there will be room for art, band, special education, and other specialties to have their very own space. Seventh grader Quinn Hennigan is working on the committee, working to come up with a plan for the two-campus school, and something that's important to him is that the two buildings retain the feeling of being one school, not two. We students are thinking about the dual campus, he said. What does it look like? How are the students going to feel about it? What grades go to each campus is a very big part. And in a related article, Decatur School's facility plan is outlined on page A7. The Decatur School District is undergoing several building changes over the next few years. Here are some of the highlights. In August, Thomas Jefferson and Stephen Decatur Middle Schools combine at Stephen Decatur. Harris School becomes Alternative Education Center. Process begins to install air conditioning in all buildings that lack it. By August 2020, Garfield and Enterprise combine as one Montessori program housed at Jefferson's building. French Academy moves to Enterprise's building. The Dentist School expands to two campuses and takes over French's building on Wood and Monroe Streets. Renovations on Franklin, Muffley, South Shores, and Parsons to accommodate larger student populations. New building construction on the campus of Johns Hill to replace existing building. By August 2020, Baum, Oak Grove, Stevenson, and Durfee close. Baum students move to Muffley, Stevens students to Parsons, Oak Grove students to Franklin. New Johns Hill completed, and air conditioning installed in all buildings. And an article from the front page of the Monday, June 3rd, Decatur Herald and Review, headline, Missing Scholar Trial Set to Begin, by Michael Tarm. A former University of Illinois graduate student is set to stand trial in the 2017 disappearance and suspected killing of a visiting scholar from China, a case in which the death penalty is possible and that has been closely watched in the home country of the victim whose body hasn't been found. Jury selection in the federal trial of Brent Christensen begins today in Peoria. Yinying Zhang, 26, was studying at the University of Illinois' flagship campus and where she was last seen. Because it's a death penalty case, jury selection is expected to take a week, as among the jurors' questions prospective jurors will be asked is whether they oppose the capital punishment. If Christensen, 29, is convicted, jurors would decide whether they think he should be executed. Zhang went missing on June 9, 2017, as she was running late to sign a lease for an off-campus apartment in Urbana. She had just missed a bus when Christensen tricked or forced her into his car, prosecutors say. Christensen told the FBI he had dropped Zhang off after a few blocks. Her disappearance led to a week-long search, which included help from more than 5,500 Chinese students at the school, which has more Chinese students than any other U.S. university. Christensen, who earned a master's degree in physics at the university, was arrested that June 30th, his birthday, and was later charged with kidnapping resulting in death. Christensen has pleaded not guilty. In court filings a week before the trial, prosecutors indicated that among the evidence they want to show jurors is carpet with an apparent bloodstain from Christensen's bedroom, a baseball bat that was in the bedroom, and a copy of the novel American Psycho that they say Christensen gave to an acquaintance. Prosecutors also want to introduce a journal that Zhang kept in Illinois. Her parents told the Associated Press in 2017 that her last entry was, "Life is too short to be ordinary." And on page A3 is an article headlined, "Cycling for a Cause, United Way's Ride United Celebrates Its 10th Year," by Annalisa Trofimuk. That's spelled T-R-O-F-I-M-U-K. Out of Decatur. Beth McClure, 59, has been an avid cyclist for half of her life. She was first introduced to cycling when she was a teenager, and the only mode of transportation to get her to and from school and work was her bicycle. In her 30s, she started what would be an impressive journey of cycling and competing in various events, including 7 Ironman triathlons. On Sunday, McClure was among dozens who participated in Ride United, an annual organized ride to benefit the nonprofit United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois. The event marked its 10th year this weekend. "You don't need to be an athlete on McClure's level to participate," organizers said. "What makes this event different is it's not a race," said United Way Executive Director Debbie Bogle. "It's just a great way for people who love cycling to get outside and enjoy the fresh air." Proceeds from the event, which usually range between $6,000 and $8,000, go toward United Way, an organization that provides assistance to causes that address poverty in the community. The social service organization does not receive help from the state and relies instead on donations and fundraisers. Spin City Cycles and Newhoff Media were sponsors of Sunday's event. Spin City Cycles co-owner Kyle May said the idea for the event came from customers expressing an interest in a planned ride event where people didn't have to compete. He said it felt it was important for avid cyclists to have an avenue where they could enjoy the ride rather than having to focus on a race. Over 130 cyclists of all skill levels chose between 4 routes that range from 20 to 60 miles, Bogle said. McClure, equipped with her giant bicycle, which she purchased from Spin City Cycles, took on the most difficult route of the day, about 54 miles of mostly gravel road. She recently retired from MacArthur High School after teaching for 24 years. McClure typically participates in about 20 competitions every year. "I love this ride because I get to enjoy the country roads of Macon County," she said, "and we are raising money for a great cause." And on page A4, an article headlined, "DMH earns A for patient safety." Decatur Memorial Hospital was awarded an A from the LeapFrog Group's Spring 2019 LeapFrog Hospital Safety Grade. The designation recognizes DMH's effort in protecting patients from harm and providing safer health care. The LeapFrog Group is a national nonprofit organization committed to improving health care quality and safety for customers and purchasers. The safety grade assigns an A, B, C, D, or F grade to hospitals across the country based on their performance in preventing medical errors, injuries, accidents, infections, and other harm to patients in their care. "This A rating represents the commitment our staff makes every day to patient safety, said Timothy D. Stone, Jr., President and CEO of Decatur Memorial Hospital. We are humbled again by being recognized for quality by a national organization like the Leapfrog Group. To be recognized nationally as an A hospital is an accomplishment the whole community should take pride in, said Leah Binder, President and CEO of the Leapfrog Group. Hospitals that earn an A grade are making it a priority to protect patients from preventable medical harm and error. We congratulate hospital leaders, board members, staff volunteers, and clinicians who work so hard to earn this A. Developed under the guidance of a national expert panel, the Leapfrog Hospital Safety Guide uses 28 measures of publicly available hospital safety data to assign grades to more than 2,600 U.S. acute care hospitals twice per year. The hospital safety grades methodology is peer-reviewed and fully transparent, and the results are free to the public. Decatur Memorial Hospital was awarded the A grade today when Leapfrog announced grades for the spring 2019 update. To see DMH's full grade results and to access patient tips for staying safe in the hospital, visit hospitalsafetygrade.org. That's all one word, hospitalsafetygrade.org, and follow the Leapfrog Group on Twitter or Facebook. And these articles from page A3 of the Saturday, June 1st edition. Coroner says man died from shot to chest. Police are investigating the shooting death of Suave L. Turner, a 28-year-old Decatur man who was brought to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital on Thursday night, Macon County Coroner Michael Day said Friday. Day, in a news release, said Turner was pronounced dead in the hospital's emergency room at 11:39 p.m. An autopsy was conducted at the McLean County Coroner's Morgue in Bloomington, he said, and found that the preliminary cause of Turner's death was a single penetrating gunshot wound to his upper right chest. In a statement, Decatur Police Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said officers went to St. Mary's at 11:25 p.m. after someone was brought to the hospital in a private vehicle. He said the victim had suffered a single gunshot wound to the chest and subsequently died. Detectives were called in and are conducting interviews, he said. The case is being investigated as a homicide. Day identified Turner as the victim Friday morning and said that an inquest is pending. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact the Decatur Police Department at 217-424-2711. Also, man was arrested after drug deals. Police arrested a 27-year-old Decatur man after detectives said they observed him engaging in what appeared to be multiple drug transactions from the front porch of a house on the 400 block of West Leafland Avenue. The man was being held in Macon County Jail on Friday on preliminary charges of possessing 1 to 15 grams of a controlled substance with intent to deliver and possession of ammunition by a felon. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County Sheriff's Attorney's Office. The man's bond has been set at $50,000. A signed affidavit said members of the Decatur Macon County Street Crimes Unit executed a search warrant at the home on Leafland on Thursday. The man was on the porch as officers carried out the search warrant, the affidavit said. Inside the house, officers found two small bags with about 1.7 grams of a substance that field tested positive for cocaine, the affidavit said. Two digital scales and one live 45 caliber round of ammunition inside were also found, the affidavit said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review from June 2nd and June 3rd, 2019. Please stay tuned.